release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to Podcast and Chill with Matt G.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.
Hinda, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special edition of Podcast and Chill. So today we're chilling with I don't even know how to describe this guy, bro. This guy's a fucking broadcasting legend.
Old. A god.
Goat of all goats.
Old goat. Yeah, I'll take that. That sounds good to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Gareth Cliff.
Nice to see you, man. Been a broadcaster for
25 years. Thank you so much for coming through, man.
Thank you.
I actually didn't think you were going to do the interview.
Why not?
Because you're hardly doing interviews.
Well, I think if I'm doing 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, that's kind of enough. You know, if you listen to the show, you'll get everything you want from me, and the rest I'm not particularly interested in. But I like you, and you came on my TV show.
Yeah.
And I also just like the way you're fearless, man. You know, you've paid the price in a number of ways for having an opinion.
Yeah.
And I think that all these people who complain about those of us who have an opinion are secretly jealous, because it's the only way you really know you're free.
Mm.
If you can say what you think. And a lot of people can't say what they think. They're terrified. Most people are like that.
Yeah.
And I admire that about you.
Wow, man. That's my fucking ringtone. Hey, can we make that the intro, eh? Listen, I've been an admirer of yours for a long time, like most people have in broadcasting. I've got so many questions I want to ask you, but the first thing I want to know, how was it like? Take me back to 2000 when you met Howard Stern.
Oh, wow. I'm so pleased you picked up on that, because it's something most South Africans, they wouldn't know the name, really.
But yeah.
I met him in New York. I spoke to his producer, Gary, before I left South Africa. And I just started doing an afternoon show on 702 at the time.
Yeah.
And I thought, if there's anyone in radio I want to meet, it's got to be this guy.
He had
like 27 million listeners across all the markets. He was still on FM radio then, and he hadn't done his deal with Sirius. Satellite radio at that point. But they said, sure, come in. And obviously I knew it was going to happen, because I'm from South Africa and I'm white. So they started playing like xylophone music.
And
those days you could get away with this stuff, but Howard turned to Robin, who's black, and he says to her, "Hey, Robin, Gareth was just carried in by 6 black slaves."
Whoa.
So I was like, oh, Jesus. So I know where this is going. And it was hilarious, but you know, something really special happened there, and it's a talent that I know you have, and it's talent very few people have, is he takes his, and he wears these sunglasses for effect, and he took them off, and he looks right into your soul, and he asks you questions that you go, there's nothing I can do but be honest with this guy.
Yeah.
He's just the best interviewer in the world, and I include Larry King, I include Parkinson in England, I include some of the best. Oprah Winfrey, he's better than all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
He's amazing. And by the end of it, you feel like you've met someone. You feel like you've sat down for like a good night's drinks with somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And the only thing he said to me at the end, because I said to him, look, you know, I'm 21, 22.
Jeez.
Give me some advice about radio. And he said to me, just be yourself.
Yeah.
Even if it gets you into trouble, even if you lose sponsors, even if people turn their backs on you and they call you things, you just got to be you, because you'll only ever be the second best anyone else.
Wow.
Which is, I mean, it's true, right?
Yeah. And how do you pick up on him? Because I started getting introduced to Howard Stern when I watched Private Parts.
Yeah.
And I started doing research.
Me too. Yeah. So you're younger than me, but that movie came out while I was at Varsity. And I used to, you know how we kind of used to bootleg rap? Back in the sort of Notorious B.I.G. and Tupac. Those years, you couldn't get a lot of that stuff here. And we would bootleg all the kind of studio stuff that he was doing. And I had a friend in New York who was sending me that. And I said to him, please just record little bits of Howard for me so I can hear what the fuss is about.
Yeah.
And I just realized straight away that this guy is a genius.
Yeah.
Genius.
Jeez, I'd lose my mind if I met him. I'd pee my pants from excitement.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And then was it, after meeting him, was it your intention to now become like the shock jock?
Well, no, I'd already started causing trouble before then, just because at campus radio, you're an attention seeker.
Yeah,
you have
yeah,
to
yeah.
be. You have to try and get everybody to sit up and take notice. I'm happy to say now I've matured a little bit, just a little.
Tiny.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
But in those days, I did anything to get attention.
For real?
And yeah, of course. You were doing like wild, outrageous things on radio. And also being campus radio, you didn't really care because you weren't being paid anyway.
Yeah.
So if you got fired, which happened to me.
Yeah. How the hell did you get fired at a campus station?
Well, this is it. I was calling my mom's domestic worker for weather updates, and she's not a weather expert at all. I was doing these mock truth and reconciliation commissions with Pia Viabuerta and like all these apartheid guys who weren't going in front of the TRC. And yeah. I was like making up what they would have said, which was hugely politically contentious at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I was pushing the limits in every direction. So
where did you do the penis contest?
Oh, yeah. That wasn't even the thing that got me fired, but that happened at campus radio too. And you'll be pleased to know the black guys won. The stripper assures me she was very scientific about it. But you know, I mean, like when you're at campus radio level, that's what you do because you have to make a name for yourself out of nowhere and you're under pressure to be noticed.
Yeah. But I got an issue with the term shock jock.
Yeah, me too. It sticks to everything. Now, you know, you do one thing that's shocking. I'm sure you've done this too. You've got hours and hours and hours of radio.
Yeah.
Right, under your belt. And you've got hours of television.
Mm.
But the 5 minutes that you were shocking at one point in 2016
100%.
Are the only ones that anyone calls you by. And and that becomes your moniker.
And I don't know about you, but I don't wake up saying, fuck, I want to shock people. It's just like telling the truth. And then that happens to be a shocking moment.
I'll admit, when I was in my early 20s, I probably did. But now I don't. In fact, the last thing I want to do is shock people. The last thing I care about is controversy.
Mm, 100%,
It frightens me because the costs are so high.
The price is high. Yeah, there's a lot at stake.
Yeah, especially when you're not only the product, which I am in terms of my show, but you're actually running a business where you're employing other people whose livelihood depends on you.
Yeah.
So I'm no longer only responsible for me. If I make a stupid decision and say something really, really dumb or something that's purely for effect, it now costs other people.
Mm.
And I can't do that. I don't sleep well knowing I've done that.
Is it hard for you to wear the different hats?
Yeah, it is.
Because by nature, you're a broadcaster.
Yeah,
that's what you want to do, you know?
I'm probably a horrible CEO. I mean, ask the guys who work for me. They'll tell you. But it is. It's tough. I don't think you ever really find the balance, but I'm learning, and I think I'm getting better at it.
Yeah. End of the month is tough for me, man, because you got to pay all these people.
Motherfuckers cost money.
It's 7 years of Cliff Central.
Mm-hmm.
How did it start, man?
I was on 5FM. We were doing the morning show.
Yeah.
And I realized that it was as good as it was going to get. Radio, I'd done everything I wanted to do. We had incredible ratings. I think it was the highest morning show ratings 5FM had ever had.
Wow.
But by like, you know, by a couple of hundred thousand.
Yeah.
And
were you killing Fresh at that time? Because he was doing
Mornings were way ahead. And we were bringing in a huge amount of money too. I mean, that was the stage when the SABC was still profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So I was proud of what we were doing, but I needed something new. And also radio is so, it's anything could happen. You go in one day, you could be fired the next.
And you're the last to know.
Yeah, exactly. Your card just doesn't work. So I thought, I can't rely on this. This is not what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It's too unstable. And also, I've seen what happens to old DJs. You know, once you've gone over the apex, then people put you out to pasture. You go to some horrible station where you're playing adult contemporary music and you're telling people the time and doing this day in history. And people are going, Jesus, he's still on radio?
Yeah.
I didn't want that.
You're talking about Alex J?
No, I mean, there's so many.
There's a lot.
But he's definitely one of them.
How was your first year of business? Because at that time, podcasting wasn't even a thing. Like, I didn't even know people now still don't know what podcasting is.
Okay, so I'd been listening to podcasts for probably about 5 or 6 years before that already. I wasn't listening to a lot of radio. I don't know how you feel about radio now, but there's not much worth listening to. And I'm not just saying, I'm careful to say that because then people go, oh, he's just bitter because he's not on radio anymore.
Yeah.
But remember, I left. I wasn't fired. Mm. So I have nothing to be bitter about. I still have friends who are in radio. Mm. But there's nothing new going on there.
Yeah.
And if you tune into most of the shows that have listeners, they're doing competitions and giveaways half the time.
Yeah.
There's nothing entertaining. Yeah.
It's very corporate
now. But they have to be middle of the road because otherwise they scare away the sponsors. Mm. So it's not interesting to listen to. And really, the kind of people who haven't realized that there are other things available than radio deserve to have bad entertainment.
I think radio started losing us when they started focusing more on sponsors instead of the consumer, the person, the listener.
Yeah.
That's listening.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
You know?
I want to get some water. Give me a second.
Yeah, 100%.
I just realized now I've had some coffee.
No, not a problem.
We'll carry on in a second.
Yeah, if you got some alcohol as well, bring that too.
He's a horrible CEO, but not that horrible. Alcohol at work.
Hey, shit. Oh, so you're here. Go on, Jeff. I forgot.
Yeah, right.
Sorry.
You've been so quiet.
He's saying nothing. I'm worried about you.
No, don't worry.
I was going to drink what was here, but it looks like it could be paraffin, and I don't know what you guys are into.
Could be. Did you get some water?
Sears, bring it.
No. All right, cool. So, yeah, so podcasts are not even a thing at that time, you know?
No, so I started listening to podcasts, and I thought this is the future of audio. It's the future of storytelling, which is the oldest human... It's the oldest human balm. It connects us, right?
Yeah.
And in Africa, we've got this history of oral tradition, which is how we know our culture. It's how we know our history. It's how we know our identity. And I just thought this is something which can be turned into a business. This is something which people are hungry for. Radio all sounds the same. Mm. And we can do amazing things here. Mm. And that was 7.5 years ago. And in New York, when I was there with Rena, who's my business partner,
yeah,
the two of us were in a cheesecake shop on 7th Avenue. And I said to her, let's press the button. Let's do this now. And we decided when we got back, which was in February, to start putting the wheels in motion. But I only told 5FM 2 weeks before I left.
Yeah.
I always thought you got fired from 5, eh?
A lot of people do. I didn't. Happily, and the record will show that they actually called me in to the CEO of broadcast of commercial broadcasting's office the day before I left to try and get me to stay.
Mm.
So, I mean, you know, if they'd fired me, why would that happen?
And are you funding this from your idols' money you've made from gigs?
No, I mean, so look, over the years, I've put some money away, but we did start this business. We don't have any investors. What we did is we managed to put together a deal with, at that stage, WeChat, who were...
Oh, yes, I remember.
Who were just coming into South Africa, and they were
Comedy
looking
Central.
To... Correct, and they were,
yes,
trying to grow their customer base, which we helped them do. And it was a very successful combined effort. It did mean, though, that for the first year, we were only available on WeChat and our website, which was... Because we built our own app in, I think, September of the following year, which also changed things. And then we were available as a podcast everywhere. And, you know, then obviously Apple Podcasts started to take off in South Africa. Mm. Spotify came in a bit later. So it's all changed quite remarkably since then. But the podcasting business is still, it's still young.
Yeah,
I mean, there's not a huge audience, you know this, but they're a powerful audience.
Yeah.
And I always say to people, don't count the listeners, reach the listeners who count.
Woo!
Which is what podcasting, I mean, what's the point? I'm not trying to be mean here. This is not some kind of attention-seeking comment. But what is the point of having 1,000 listeners who have no money to spend if you're trying to get advertisers?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rather have 100 listeners who do have money, because those are the people who advertisers want to reach. They're buying things.
True.
And there you can make money. You can also create beautiful content. Instead of having to create stuff that's very mainstream, that's going to appeal to millions, that's what radio is trying to do. Niche audiences are the future.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like radio. The stations with the most listeners aren't the ones making the most money a lot of
times.
That's
exactly right. I mean, I think Ukwazi is still the biggest station in the world, eh?
Yeah. In the world?
Southern Hemisphere or something
they've got,
like that.
They've got more listeners, I think, than any other station in the world in terms of being one station. You know, there's syndicated programs that have more listeners, but... In terms of one station with an audience in a geographical area, I think Ukwazi's still got the record. And look, they do okay.
Yeah, but
we know what the SABC's finances are like. So I wouldn't put too much faith in that.
When was the sorry?
What are some of your favorite podcasts?
So I listened to a bunch of things. I listened the podcasts that got me started were Bill Maher's Real Time, because he does an HBO show in America, which is on TV. But then they turned that into a podcast years ago. It was very clever. They immediately put it into audio format, and I've listened to that pretty much since the get-go. So every week there's at least an hour or so where I'll be listening to Bill Maher. There's a great history podcast, which is by a guy called Dan Carlin. He only brings it out, maybe he brings an episode out every 6 months.
For real?
So, I mean, I'm refreshing that app regularly, and there's nothing for months. And then when he does, it's like an eight-hour episode.
Wow.
On like World War One and the bombs that were going off in Verdun, and he talks about the blood in the trenches, and it's like it's called Hardcore History, and he is just the most superb storyteller. Yeah. So that blows my mind. And then there are lots of funny shows I listen to. I listen to a little bit of politics and current affairs. But the nice thing about politics, I mean, podcasting. Not politics. The thing about podcasting is that if you're in a mood for entertainment, you can find something. If you're in the mood for news, you can find something.
History. And
history. Whatever you're into, man. I mean, there are podcasts about cars, about wine, about coffee, about Star Wars, about anything you could possibly imagine. Every celebrity and their dog has now got a podcast too. And some of them are really, really good. And the majority of them, it has to be said, are pretty average.
Yeah.
You know, the things we learned in radio are things that most podcasters don't know. And they're not necessarily smoke and mirror tricks. It's just ways of connecting with an audience that a lot of people don't always think about. You know, the most interesting person in the world is the person who doesn't say a thing about themselves and ends up interviewing you.
Woo!
And then you think, wow, that person's amazing because all they did was talk about you for an hour. No, you can test this on anyone you like. You can sit down with anyone. You know nothing about them.
Yeah.
And you can spend an hour just asking them about, you know, tell me about your background, your father, your mother, what did you do as your first job? What are you in a relationship? Tell me about your lifestyle. What do you like to do on weekends? By the end of that hour, they're like, wow, that was the most interesting guy I've ever met. And meanwhile, they don't know a thing about you. Because
that's so true.
It's people are self-absorbed, you know?
And then on radio, who are you currently listening to?
I'm not listening to radio at all. Don't listen. I do not listen. My phone is connected via Bluetooth in my car, and I listen at home on earphones or with the speaker of my phone on, and I don't have any reason to listen to radio.
But give me your top
What do you listen to?
On radio.
Yeah. Anything?
I like to listen to radio on the weekends because they just play mixes and music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even that, you can go on to, you know, Beats or something. You can find even better stuff that isn't tainted with commercials.
But I like
commercials in between, and some idiot telling you the time as if you don't have it on your phone. You know?
Or a voice note.
I mean, really. Yeah.
But I like Roger Good. Roger Good's fucking amazing. I like him.
Well, if you do, that's entirely up to you. I mean, Shane, does he? What is he doing now?
He's doing the breakfast show.
No,
I don't think he is.
It's even evenings now.
Who's doing breakfast
or something?
No, I heard from one of our people that he was actually looking for a job, and I said no.
You kidding? So he's doing breakfast at 5 now.
It's a new guy.
There's a new guy.
Cape Town, yeah.
I don't know.
You kidding?
Let me not be horrible.
Some guy from Cape Town.
Roger and I have had a lot of very, very funny flights together to Cape Town to do gigs. We've laughed a lot. He's a good guy. I have no axe to grind with Roger. He was making fun of me on his morning show, and I suppose that's what we have to do to entertain our audience.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give it right back, but there's no hard feelings. Like if I saw Roger now, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
I honestly, when I go to sleep at night, despite all the things I've done and all the things I've said, there's no one in the world I'm reserving any hatred for. I don't hate any of the politicians that I'm saying things about on a daily basis. I don't hate anybody in radio or television. I mean, to me, this business is small.
Yeah.
And ultimately you're going to cross paths with everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no point in having issues.
Give me your top five, though, of all time, radio
jokes. Of radio?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've got to say that in this country, there are some proper legendary people. Bob Mabena, who I've always looked up to, on air. You know, he was my boss for a little while at Primedia. And I didn't like him as a boss. No, it wasn't Primedia. It was at SABC. But he was a great broadcaster. I've always held Fresh in very high esteem. As a broadcaster, that guy is just, he's such a pro. Wherever he goes, whatever he does, he knows what he's doing. I have always looked up to John Burks, who was probably the original South African broadcast celebrity. And I was fortunate enough to have been around to listen to him and to have, for a very short space of time, worked at the same station as
him. Didn't
you
replace him?
I did. Well, yeah. I mean, he left. He retired, and I ended up taking over the morning show from him. What a legend that guy is. To fill the other slots, I don't know. I mean, there's probably some new talent. There are probably a few people who I should know about that I don't, but I don't think about radio very much, Mo.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not part of my day to day. It's like live TV. When last did you actually sit down and watch a TV show live? You know, unless it's sport.
When Man United plays, yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, you can get everything on demand. Yeah. So, and radio is just, I think it's still got power. I'll never write radio off, but its power is waning significantly. And you can see it in the ratings.
Yeah. So what happened with your merge with Tibo Touch? Because you guys started at Touch Central.
So Touch was, you remember, he was fired by Metro. And I met him at a party and I said to him, what are you going to do now? And he said, there are a couple of stations making offers. And I said to him, why don't you do your own thing like I did? We need more big names in this business.
Space,
and we need people to create opportunities for other people.
100%.
And he said, look, I don't know anything about it, but yeah, let's talk. And we had a meeting. And we gave him the know-how and the infrastructure to start what was then Touch Central became Touch HD. But I exited quite early there because he had a very different way of managing things to me. And as much as I've always had a personal liking for Touch, I don't necessarily know whether we could have been in business for very long.
Is it because he was laundering money?
I don't know that. I can't tell you that for a fact. All I know is that there are a lot of people who've said to me he owes them money. And I don't know. But I have, again, no axe to grind. If I saw Touch tomorrow, we'd be friends. I mean, he didn't hurt me or steal anything from me or launder anything that was mine.
Yeah.
So
whatever happened to the Dartmouth Fall thing?
I think he did owe us a little bit of rent money. But
who's counting?
I'm prepared to write it off.
What happened to the Dartmouth Fall thing?
Oh, that we went to Parliament, eh?
Yeah, yeah. How did
that go? We presented to the Minister of Communications, and I think we tried our best to convince her that data prices are too high. We know they are too high.
Yeah, they still are.
I mean, how many people in this country are buying data before they're buying food? Because it's so essential. And it's almost like a human right. And that was kind of our pitch to Parliament's Portfolio Committee. I mean, it was quite cool. We like got dressed up, flew to Cape Town. We were invited to Parliament. You know, you stand up and you talk at this bench where, you know, the MPs speak.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, it was bizarre. And now that you've reminded me, I'd actually completely forgotten about it. But it was a nice experience. And
did you see any politicians that you talk smack about on the radio?
Not really. I mean, there was mostly the Portfolio Committee on Communication, and I must be honest with you, I don't know many of the MPs.
Yeah.
None of the famous ones were there. None of the ones who... And I mean, who doesn't deserve a bit of talking smack? If you go into public office, people have the right to complain about you and to talk about you honestly.
Yeah.
Don't make me feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
Because I don't.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether we achieved what we hoped would be achieved, because you know how politics is, and you know how the big cell phone networks have such a stranglehold on things. I don't know. We tried to make deals with all of them to make data at least for education purposes.
Yep.
And I think there was a significant win there that, you know, if you needed to download textbooks or you needed to get audio lessons and things, I think that was something they all came to the party on. But that was only part of what we wanted. We wanted a general reduction in price because poor people in this country cannot afford data. And I think for people who can, they don't really care. They'll pay whatever they can to get the content they want. Like if they want your show, they're going to come and get it.
100%.
Which is good. And you're just like me, you're not charging them a subscription.
No, not at all.
You know, so they're getting it for free, which means, I mean, in most of the models in America, you have to pay a subscription. And then that would allow you to employ all the people you employ to produce a better product for people. But I think there were so many barriers to entry when we started Cliff Central. I didn't want to also charge people money.
Yeah.
It was bad enough they had to pay the networks what they did.
Yeah. And how have you been able to maintain sponsorships? Because you're a very controversial figure yourself. Yeah. And I'm finding it very hard now.
Dude, it is. And I've got to tell you, like, you've got to hold on, because there are brands that are brave and there are brands that will stand by you, and clients that you have relationships with who know you're trying to do the best you can. And who know that you're trying to keep your audience happy, to keep the content really good. And to bring in the money. And yeah. I think it's very hard to get those three circles to overlap all the time. But where they do, it benefits everyone enormously. And that kind of authentic value, you don't get in media. You don't get that from a 30-second commercial.
Jeez.
And you don't get that from the kind of brand who's going to run away just because you've said something which is non-woke, you know? And all these people are so woke now, they're going to look back in 10 years' time on their record and they're going to be embarrassed because they're going to say, why did we run away from the people who were speaking the truth and the people who were talking about things that mattered just so we would be safe? So that's what they're looking for. They're looking for safety. And I've got to tell you, the human condition is not safety. The human condition is constant conflict. And if you are so weak that, and if your brand is so weak that you can't take a little bit of controversy, then you don't deserve the reward that comes with standing up for something that counts.
Ooh, fucking hell. Wow. Where's that thing?
Solve it. It doesn't always work that way, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them will run and hide. And you can't blame them. It's a board of people who've been, you know, probably in there for a long time. They're scared of change. They're nervous about being on the wrong side of an issue. And my God, every issue is polarized. Every issue is polarized. There isn't a thing that we talk about anymore that doesn't put people in direct opposition.
Yeah.
And that's scary because it means that we've lost the ability to, first of all, have meaningful, deep, and important conversations. Instead, we talk on the surface, and you always side with your side. Or worse, to me, the biggest calamity of the whole thing is that we've lost a sense of humor in all of this. Like, some things are just not funny anymore. And they should be, because humans are ridiculous. We are ridiculous creatures. But I can't joke about, someone who has, like Caitlyn Jenner. I can't joke about her because even though Caitlyn Jenner as a person is a ridiculous person, she's a representative of the trans community. So anything I say about her, the trans community think, well, I'm going at them, which is not true. She drives like a fucking idiot. Okay, and that's the truth for Caitlyn Jenner. That doesn't mean everybody else in the trans community drives badly. But you can't even say that anymore.
So do you think freedom of speech is gone?
No, I think it's just, it's never gone, but it's something that you have to keep fighting for. It's never won. You know, in 1994, we all thought we'd won the right to be free. But that right needs constant awareness and vigilance. And you need to be willing to go to battle for your freedom. And the freedom of speech is one of those battles we have to keep engaging in. And it's not going to be the majority of people who do it, because the majority of people are quietly going about their lives, trying not to get into trouble.
100%.
It's up to people like you and me. Because otherwise, who's going to do it for them? It's not the politicians. The politicians are trying to take away our freedoms most of the time. We know this last year. You know, that for good or for bad reasons, they say it was for good to keep us safe from a virus. But look at how many of our freedoms we surrendered. And we just gave it up. And we're still in level one, apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently, you can't be driving around at 2 a.m, but I have been. Have you?
Yeah, lots of times.
Apparently, you're not meant to have your mask off in certain places, but I have. Haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't care, and we've got to keep fighting for that stuff. Common sense has got to win in the long run.
Do you think they made money from pandemic?
I mean, listen, we know what happened to all that that relief money. It didn't go to people who are standing in queues right now for 350 rand. 350 rand. While Noma Gigaba is at the State Capture Commission telling us about how 3,000 rand means nothing to her. Do me a favor.
Fuck.
There's a very, very rich, very elitist aristocracy in this country, oligarchy in this country. These people who have been taking a percentage of everything that the rest of hardworking South Africa has made and taking advantage of poor people and unemployed people, even worse, because they're more hopeless. These poor people, some of them might have jobs, even if they pay very little. Yeah. But unemployed people have no hope.
Have you ever thought about starting your own party? Because
never. Would you ever go into politics? Think about what you have to do.
No, actually, I would, man.
I've thought about it, but I would never do it.
It's an easy check. How hard could it be?
Check. So one of the things that keeps getting you into trouble is you can't help but speaking your mind.
Yes.
You can never do that as a politician. You've got to sing off the hymn sheet.
Donald Trump did it.
No, he didn't. That's why he's not there anymore. Because when he started to speak his mind, the politics
started getting panicked,
freaked out,
yeah.
You know? I mean, like the whole political system freaked out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in some way, you know, America's been saying for 150 years, oh, we need a third party candidate, someone who isn't a Democrat or Republican, someone who's an independent. And then they got this, even though he masqueraded as a Republican, and it scared the hell out of them. And I don't know that they'll be able to say that they want that again. We'll see. We'll see. It was definitely an aberration.
Because when I listen to your show, you seem to have all the answers. I'm like, actually, if this guy was president.
Believe. Dude, no, first of all, I would never, you see, the problem with a lot of politicians is they claim to have a mandate from people. They, you hear these politicians talk about, oh, I represent these people.
Yeah.
But actually, they don't. Mm. So I think 12 million people voted for the ANC in the last election. We've got a population of 66 million.
Yeah.
12 million out of 66 million is not a mandate.
No.
It means you've got a majority of a minority.
Mm.
And even worse for the opposition parties. I mean, they can't claim to have any kind of real mandate.
Mm.
So who represents the unemployed who've stopped going to the polls? We've got a local election this year. Who are those millions of adult South Africans? I think it's something like 20 million of them who don't even go to the polls anymore. Who's representing them? Do they even believe in the system anymore? Some of our municipalities have been bankrupt for 5 years.
Jeez.
Those people are already living in anarchy. They know what it feels like to not have a government.
Mm.
Now, I don't know that I would be any use in that system. My usefulness is probably outside the system. Mm. And my talents and abilities, whatever they may be, because I sometimes doubt what the hell I'm any good at. I'm sure you do too.
Mm.
You know, those nights where you lie in bed and you're like, what the hell am I actually doing? What can I do? Well, how can I make the world a little bit better? Because I seem to be just doing very average things.
It's just a normal Tuesday for us.
Dude, I'm telling you. And we all feel that way, right? And it's important to acknowledge that. But I don't think I could be useful as a politician. And I would hate it. I would hate to tell people, you know, especially people if I don't like them, to say to them, I care about you. It's a lie.
Where does your love for politics stem from?
I'm just interested in the world. I'm interested in a lot of things. Politics is what we all talk about because it's an easy entry-level subject. Like, you don't have to be qualified in politics to talk about it. Anybody. I mean, you see it on the news. They go up to some guy in the street and they give him a microphone. They say, what do you think of what happened in the Concord? And he goes, because he's like high on meth. And he's like, well, I'm with the Chief Justice. And you're like, shit, all right. Because politics is anybody's subject. But I'm interested in history, in chemistry, in art, in science, in music.
Elements.
Dude, I'm interested in so many of those things. And I think that, you know, to me anyway, I don't mark my own intelligence by how much I know, because there's a lot that I don't know about. I mark it by how much I want to know.
Mm.
And if you're not a curious person in the world, if you don't want to find out what's going on, why things are the way they are, and politics sometimes gives us insight into those things, particularly the behavior of human beings in a society, then it becomes something you talk about often. But if you're not curious about that stuff, I don't see what the point of being alive is.
So let's say you wake up one day, you are president of South Africa. What would your ideal South Africa be? What would you change?
I would love everybody in this country to be able to wake up with purpose, with meaning. And that doesn't mean material things. It doesn't mean political things. It doesn't mean any of these things that the idealists and the ideologues believe in, like, you know, equality, or because we're never all going to be equal. Someone's always going to be faster than me. Someone's always going to be better looking than me. Someone's always going to be richer than me. There's no such thing as equality. And to chase that, which socialists have tried to do for hundreds of years at least, and have failed in every possible outcome. The thing to chase here is that everybody can wake up with some sense of purpose. Now, if your purpose is to be a great surfer, you should be able to pursue that purpose. And South Africa should be the kind of country that gives people the opportunity to pursue their dreams and to wake up every morning fired up to do something. It could be to invent a new app. It could be to drive a car really fast. It could be to write a book. It could be to educate other people's children. It could be to build, to create a substance that will make it cheaper for us to be able to produce energy, for example. I mean, there's so many things that we have such talent in this country. And I'm not talking about the talent on idols. I'm talking about the talent. We've got people here who solve problems every day. and kids, you know, in child-headed households who are solving complex adult problems because they just have no option. Their parents are dead. They have nothing else to do but solve the problems of their younger siblings. Don't tell me those people don't grow up extra fast, and don't tell me those people don't know how to problem solve, and they're street smart even if they've got no degree from a university. Those people are prime in a world, the first world, the developed world, is, you know, they've got nothing more to invent that isn't on the cutting edge already. We have real problems to solve here. Every problem represents an opportunity, and South Africans are good at solving problems. So I think we've got a future ahead of us if we can stop bickering and worrying about stuff that we can't change and individually start looking to ourselves, to the things we can. And that means for all of us, just, you know, cleaning up. There's a river in front of my house, and I saw a bunch of people the other day in gumboots cleaning like plastic and crap out of the river. And I'm like, you know what? Those people are making the world better, and they're doing a much more important job than the ones who are sitting as CEOs in big office buildings in Sandton.
So at what point did you realize your purpose, that this is what I want to do?
I don't know if it is, Sam. I don't know. I mean, is
Sam,
this my purpose?
He called me more earlier. Now he's calling
Sam. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're forgiven. You're a legend. You're a legend.
Apologies, man. I don't know. I'm really
Does
not.
He look like a Sam?
See how relaxed I am.
Son of Sam. Yeah, so, maybe.
So I've realized that, like, this might not be my purpose. I might have something more to do, or maybe I think I'm destined for more, but this is all I got.
Shit.
Who knows, dude? You never work that out completely. Isn't that the point of
that's
life?
True. Yeah, that's right? True. Mm. That's true.
I see why you've never moved to Australia.
That won't happen. I mean, listen, I don't have a problem with people who do. You should be allowed to go wherever you want.
If
you guys get the opportunity to go and do this show in LA, and they're going to set you up there.
Hey, we're gone, bro. We're gone.
And you see, that's what's stupid about patriotism.
Mm.
And I used to, when I was young, and even like the up to the late 90s, where I was all like fired up on South Africa, the Rainbow Nation. We were sold this thing, you know. And some of it, I think, was a beautiful sale, and it was a beautiful idea. And I don't hate it, like people who say it was a disaster. That's not true. We've got a tremendous country with tons of potential. But nothing's perfect. And if you think it's perfect, you're an idiot. But the fact is, to me, there is no other place in the world I could make more of a difference than here. I know the terrain. I know the people. I know the language. I know the character. You know, South Africans are not like people anywhere else. And Australians will think that about themselves.
Mm.
People in Kazakhstan think that about themselves too. If I have to go over there and try and compete, if I'm selling bottles of water, I have to compete with people who've lived in New York their whole lives.
Mm.
I've got a huge market disadvantage. Yeah.
What do you think of Cyril as a president?
I would be lying if I said I was impressed with him. He's a very, very average guy. Like, I'm sad to say it because I had high hopes. I think a lot of us did.
Mm.
He doesn't even have the charisma of Jacob Zuma, who at least had character. You know, he was a character, still is a character. Not
he
always
gave you a lot of content.
Like Trump gave the Americans content. Yeah. Jacob Zuma was our Trump in that way. But I think Cyril is one of those people, and there are lots of us, lots of them. I don't really see myself as one of them, who like to do everything by committee. You know, he doesn't make decisions himself. I think he likes to consult with everyone. He's that kind of guy.
Do you think he's in bed with the Stellenbosch mafia?
I think that thing's so overplayed.
You reckon?
I don't think they have nearly the effect that people think they do on the economy. Think about how much the Guptas managed to take out. Hundreds of billions. At least these guys in the Stellenbosch mafia, that's private money.
Mm.
I mean, Marcus Huster is a criminal just like the Guptas, right?
Yeah.
But he stole private money.
Mm.
That's not public money.
Mm.
He didn't steal from us as taxpayers, which is much more egregious if you ask me.
Mm.
I mean, I might have been a Steinhoff investor. Thankfully, I wasn't. I would be just as pissed off. I heard horror stories of people who lost everything because of Marcus Huster. But that's, if you invested with him, you trusted him, you deserved it. It's different with a government. The government is not just there to represent the people who elected them. They're there to represent the whole country. Mm. And especially, be judicious with the money that the people of that country give you. You know?
And what do you think about Julius? What's your take on him?
Oh, man, I don't know. Like, he's such an enigma, hey? I met Julius years ago, and I have, which always surprises people, I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call him a friend, but we're acquaintances. He has my number, I have his. When I was arrested for speeding about 7 years, 6 years ago, he was one of the first people to call me at night. and he went, "Hey, Chief." So I said, "Hey, Julius, how are you?" He said, "Do you need a lift to work tomorrow?" So I said to him, "No, it's all right." Because I think he knows what it's like to be high profile, to be targeted. And I think he's got a great brain, hey?
Yeah, he's smart, hey?
You underestimate that man at your peril.
Yeah,
He's super smart. Yeah. I do not agree with any of his politics. I don't like some of the things he says. But you know what's great about being a little more mature now than I was 10, 15 years ago? Is that it's okay to disagree with people and you can still be friendly with people, even if they are completely opposed to you on political, social, economic, and other grounds. You don't have to hate someone just because they disagree with you.
It can be cordial.
But thanks to Twitter, people can't really do that much anymore, can they? Yeah. I mean, people don't have nuanced conversations now. So everything is black or white.
Yeah.
Everything is you're on my side or you're on that side.
That's it.
And if you're on that side, I have to hate you.
Yes.
And if I don't hate you, then I'm not showing what a good person I am to my side.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's the kind of tribal, backward, primal nonsense that we were doing when we were still walking on all fours. And we should stop that because it's embarrassing for a species that's been on Earth as long as we have and has evolved as far as we have and has the technology and the kinds of systems that we do in the world that are making us freer and better. We must not revert to that just because we feel threatened.
So you like Julius? Yes or no? I didn't get that. You like him?
I do like Julius. Okay, yeah, cool. I have a lot of time for him.
All right, cool.
I don't like his politics, but he and I can sit down and we can have a really good conversation, and we have on a number of occasions. And I have a lot of respect for him.
Let's talk about idols, man. Because I think that really took you, like, you know, to the next level in terms of popularity.
And so I was nothing before idols.
How do you get that gig? How do you get it?
So I was on 5FM. I think I just started there. And they obviously had heard. In fact, there was a season before I came on with Penny Lebiane and...
Penny was an idol.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a guy called Marcus... I can't remember his surname now. He's like a PR guy and Penny was on radio. And I think they had some disagreement. She was fired from the first season. Mm. And they were looking for someone to replace those two judges. So they approached me and they said, "Would you like to do it?" And I said, I've got limited experience in television, but sure, let's do this. It'll be fun. Can you come in for a screen test? I didn't even know what a screen test was. So I said, sure, I'll come in. Sat down, they put a camera on and they asked me a bunch of questions. And I suppose I just gave the impression that I didn't really change the person I was off camera to the person I was on. So they thought this guy's going to be at least interesting. But I will say that those first two or three seasons of Idols, it was a bit of a pissing contest because you're trying to be like this, you know, I'm going to say mean things.
He's a bad guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if anyone, I haven't got recordings of those seasons, I would never want them. But if anyone found one, I'd be horrified and embarrassed because I was putting on a show instead of being real, right? And we all understand this is show business.
Exactly.
You don't have to, it doesn't have to be complicated. You know, you can mostly be yourself. And
did you come up with lines like while you're driving, like, "Oh, I'm going to say this today"?
No, that I didn't make up. So that stuff came to me very naturally. And there were terrible singers. Yeah. So it's not as if there wasn't material. You know, you're working with some shitty material. But I did enjoy like those first couple of seasons. It would be wrong for me to say that I wasn't a bit bored towards the end.
Yeah, because when I see that show, it doesn't look like it's your cup of tea. So I'm always thinking, like, why would Gareth do this?
Well, I'm not a reality TV viewer.
Yeah.
I've never watched reality TV. I've still never seen an episode of The Kardashians. I never used to watch Big Brother or Idols or Survivor or any of that stuff. It's not my cup of tea. So it was strange, but maybe that's why they wanted me. Maybe that's why I added some, because for people who don't care about that stuff, they'd be like, "Oh, okay, he's at least representing me." And also, I do love music, so I know enough about music to be able to have, you know, a serious conversation with Randall about the Righteous Brothers, and to talk about which parts of the song each brother was singing, and to discuss melodies and harmonies and how you transpose keys and that kind of, so we could have real musical conversations. And I have a pretty good music knowledge across, you know, the period from about the 60s through to now. So it wasn't just for personality and for kicks. I suppose I was also adding some value in terms of music. And
the chick wasn't bad either, you know?
It wasn't good.
For real?
I mean, it was all revealed in the court case that I went to.
Oh, yeah.
To fight for my right to be back on the show, even though I didn't want to be back on the show. All those numbers were put out very publicly. And
how much was it? Did you see so?
How much
were you guys getting?
I don't know. They paid us 100,000+ a season. It wasn't
Fuck.
I mean, in those days, maybe it was, but, and I'm not making light. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at the budgets for American Idol or for, you know,
and you were there the whole day, right?
Well, the audition stage we were. And then you'd come in less and less through the rest of it.
I'm thinking 100K per episode, man. That's what
No. It was nowhere near that.
Jeez.
So why did you fight to be on the show, even though you didn't want to be
principle
back on the show?
And you know, the lawyers will always say to you, never go and fight on principle. But my lawyer was Dalim Pofu. So he said, it was over a Twitter storm. You remember there was that Penny Sparrow woman who said something about black people on the beaches. And then Musi Maimane tweeted, should we ban certain kinds of speech? Freedom of speech earlier, Mac. So,
Mo.
No, not Mo. I'm not that stupid. I make a mistake once. If I make a mistake twice, shame on me, right? If I make it three times, shame on you for having me on your show. So the whole situation boiled down to me retweeting Musi's poll where people had said we should ban certain kinds of speech, and me saying people don't understand freedom of speech, which in this country they're and then Mnet got very nervous because they thought it looked like I was endorsing hate speech, which obviously I wasn't. And Dalim Pofu was a guest on the show that morning here at Cliff Central. And he said to me, if they fire you, you call me immediately. I said to him, if they fire me, I'd be happy to go. He said, you can't let them make that call. And I called him straight after. And he said to me, here's a lawyer who turns out to be Jacob Zuma's lawyer now, Eric Mabuza. And Eric and Dali and I had a meeting with Rina, my business partner and manager. And that weekend, we instituted action. It was beautifully elegant. It took exactly a week.
And did
and they lost horribly. They brought 14 lawyers. They spent a ton of money. I mean, and Dali just destroyed them in court.
Wow.
He was magnificent. And then they had to put me back on the show, which I begrudgingly did. And then I resigned at the end of that year when we organized a trip for the idols to meet Harry Connick Jr. in New York, which I did with Rina as a kind of swan song.
Did they settle for $25 million?
No. I wish that was true, but that was Dali and a great headline, and it worked. It frightened Mnet, and it made people think I'd won all this money, which I wish I had. You know, we decided not to push the issue. It had been, the point had been proven.
Would you ever return to idols?
I think that chapter's closed.
I
mean, it's like, you know, would I return to radio now? I don't think so.
Yeah, bro.
I think it's done. And I also think maybe I'm a bit bored with media. I mean, I'm not bored with my show on Cliff Central. I'm not bored with the new TV show on E. Those are both interesting still. But for how long, I don't know. Maybe it's time to do something else.
How's your relationship with Mara Lowe? And what exactly happened with the drink?
So we were all on the show. First of all, I mean, I've gone into this in detail in my book because I didn't think it was an issue at the time. Mara Lowe, who's a cranky old lady, to put it mildly, she had been on some kind of medication. I don't know what it was. What happened was that backstage, Randall and I had a drink. Like, it was, I think it was the three shows from the finale or something. So we had a drink. It was like a vodka or something. And I mean, it was, you know, so I had it, and then Randall had it, and then Mara said, oh, I'll have some too. So we gave Mara.
This is before COVID, right? Yeah.
Yeah, long before. But I mean, this is something we used to go out after the show
when we were
recording in, you know, PE or Durban or whatever, and we'd all have drinks together. And I'd had conversations, fascinating conversations with Mara about all her friends in politics and, you know, Miriam Makeba, who she knew, and Rahu, and all of these people who she was. So she used to tell the most amazing stories. And we got along really well, and I'd never had a problem with Mara, but she was cranky, you know. Anyway, she had this explosion on air, which was very embarrassing to her, which it became a race issue. And this was in the early days where, you know, race issues were few and far between. Now it's every day on Twitter.
Mm.
And I think, I don't know what happened. She was probably embarrassed about it. But I had to talk to one of the crew members at Idols because she wouldn't let anyone drive her car home except me. So I put her in the passenger seat, drove her home with the Idols crew member with me, dropped her off at home and her car and went back to the place where we were filming. And I thought that was the end of it. Well, on, I think it was John Robbie's show or something on 702, she goes on and says, oh no, Gareth gave me a drink. That's what happened. It became this thing. And I was like, this is such a non-issue. And I'm so tired of this coming up all the time because it is a non-issue. I didn't think anything of it. The fact that it impacted negatively on her is none of my business. You're responsible for what you say. I'm responsible for what I say. No one was drunk. There was no big party going on backstage. No materials were put in anyone's drink. It's the same thing Randall and Mara and I had. And it was a drink before we went on air. Those were the days you could do that. I mean, I remember DJs used to smoke during their shows.
Some used to get blowjobs.
Sure. I mean, now that would have been a story.
And how are you guys now? Are you guys, have you met her since? Have you guys spoken?
I have no, you know, she kind of tried to throw me under the bus. And I don't have any hatred for her. I don't have any issues with her. But I'm not going to, you know, the funny thing was that we invited her to a Heritage Day celebration that we did here in Joburg. Just as a guest, because, you know, we got on really well. And she came there and she was delightful. She was really great company. And this whole thing happened, I think, a week after that, where she decided to tag me in this story of hers. It's like someone tagging you in a post on Snapchat that's got nothing to do with you. And I was just blown away by it. So I'm not making any efforts to reconcile with her. And I mean, frankly, I think she's moved on as well. Who cares, you know, except when it comes up in an interview like this. But the fact that it's become a story in my life is just bizarre.
Which Idols judges did you get along with?
All of them.
All of them.
No? All of them. I'm still in regular contact with Unati. We have lunch every now and then, and she's just delightful. She's one of the best people I've ever met in this business.
As a singer, out of 10, how much do you give?
I do not judge her singing because I don't judge anyone singing anymore unless you're paying me. I'm not judging anyone singing, but I will tell you. I don't know if you're trying to make if you're trying to be mean about her singing.
No, I'm asking your opinion.
You are not an Idols judge, so you have no opinion.
Yes, but you are.
No, but I'm not, you're not paying me. And
I'm
and
not pro.
I'll tell you what. I love Unati to pieces. She and I have had such great times together. I wrote about those in my book too. And if she's one of the few people, if she called me, and she was in the middle of the Karoo and she was trying to hide a body, I'd help her.
Wow, that's powerful, man.
Wow.
Your favorite idol?
I don't remember any of them.
I was telling Saul the other day, I only remember Heinz Winkler. The rest, I don't know.
No. So I used to get people saying I looked like Heinz Winkler.
Oh, yeah, actually.
That was embarrassing. But I mean, I remember, you know, I remember some of the singers, and if I met them, I suppose I'd click. But there was a very embarrassing incident with Randall and Anele and I at a club one night where some girl came up and said hello to Randall, and both he and I had no idea who she was. And Anele said to us afterwards, don't you guys realize that girl won like season 5? And I mean, we weren't being horrible. We just didn't, you know, you've been through 11 seasons by the stage that I was still on the show.
Yeah.
Randall's been through about 15. You don't remember all the details.
Yeah.
And we all get, I mean, Randall's a terrific human being too. I have such respect and time for that guy. He knows more in his little finger about music than everyone else I've ever met. He can tell you the story about how Ronnie Spector fell in love with Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys and how they wrote a song for each other, but the one didn't know the song was for the other one.
Whoa.
And they only met on stage like 20 years later.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's the most beautiful love story. When you hear the songs played side by side, it just breaks your heart. He knows stuff like that that is just so moving. He's a music lover. Randall loves music more than he loves any person that has ever lived.
And Somizi? Because he's my favorite judge.
Som is terrific too. He is one of the funniest and most talented people in South Africa.
Yeah.
He's just... He's a he's a dynamo. Like, I don't know where that guy gets his energy. He's a packet of dynamite. And everywhere he goes, he makes people laugh and smile.
Do you remember the first time you met him?
Well, I think before we even started doing Idols together, we gave him a show here.
Oh, yes. We were just starting, yeah.
And he went from here to Metro. But I think I met him before. I know I met his mom, Mary Twyla, a couple of times. And I might have met him through her. But that was years and years ago. So yeah. The first proper memory I have of him is here at Cliff Central and then at Idols.
So during this interview, you've mentioned a couple of times that, you know, you're older, wiser now. Are we still not having kids?
I reserve the right to change my mind. The nice thing about being a man, and I don't like saying this around girls, I get a bit upset, but we can have kids whenever we want.
Mm, mm, mm.
And I mean,
facts, that's a fact.
It's a biological fact. Exactly. It's not fair, but I, you know, Larry King, who we, I think, all look at as a champion broadcaster, he had like a 10-year-old in his 80s. So I mean, it's possible. I have not yet met anyone I would marry. But I'm a very happy person, don't get me wrong. Mm. I've had great relationships. I'm friends with a majority of my exes, which is rare, I think, these days. But I've never wanted to devote my... I think people ask me, do I take marriage seriously? I think I do. Mm. I think I take it so seriously that if I did commit, I would have to be committed.
Yeah.
And I'd have to do it for life. So far... I'm having too much fun. I've got too many interests. I've got this business. I've got a family I love. Mm. You know, I've got this business partner, Rena, who I suppose in some ways she kind of fills in a few of the places that a relationship might, because we travel together a lot. We run this business. It's like our child. We laugh and we have conversations about life. She's a very, very wise woman. I have friends who make me think. I had a friend of mine visit from Texas the other day, and he and his family, he's got two kids, he lives in Dallas. And having him here, it was two Fridays ago, just talking to him for the first 15 minutes, he's one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. In fact, I would say he's the cleverest person I know. Wow. You give him a problem, any complex problem, he will solve it immediately. He was at Varsity with me, and I was the MC at his wedding. And I thought, you know, with friends like that, I'm very, very blessed in my life. I have so much going for me. I'm fortunate. And to be greedy, it's like being greedy for money.
Mm.
You know, only if you think back to when you were a student or when you had, you know, 50 Rand, you could make that 50 Rand go a long way in those days.
100%.
And it wasn't just because of inflation, right? Now, you look at your bank balance, it's never enough. Somehow, when you were a student, you were like, God, I can go out for meals, I can go out for drinks, never runs out, because you're like, somehow you budget. Maybe you buy the round this time, your friends buy it next time. But it's like that with life. I think that the more you learn and the more people you have in your life, the more kind of you think you need, and I'm blissfully unaware of that need.
Wow. Is it true that you swing both ways?
No, but that is something that comes up quite a lot. I suppose... I mean, in this day and age, I mean, that would, if that were the case, I'd just admit it.
Because
it's not only acceptable and tolerable to most people, it's actually cool.
Mm.
So, I mean, there'd be no reason for me to deny that.
Yeah. But I wouldn't put it past you, because you're very inquisitive, you know, so.
Yeah, I understand that, you know, these days, and for people much younger than us, Mac, there are less of these rules than ever before.
Yeah.
You know, there's kind of this idea of, you know, everybody's pansexual or everybody's gender non-binary or whatever all this stuff is. I don't know what that is. I know what I like. I suppose we all, you know, in our heart of hearts have some idea of what we're predisposed to.
What do you like?
But I'm not a very emotionally needy person.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
The key. Like, I know, you know, there are four levels that you connect with people. The physical level, that's attraction, sex.
Yeah.
So that's easy to fulfill.
Yeah.
You know immediately when you meet someone. There's emotional. Emotional need is you're in love.
Mm.
You want that hug, you want that affirmation. That's what emotion is. I have very low emotional need. Maybe, you know, my parents raised me really nicely. I had a happy childhood. I'm more intellectually stimulated than I am emotionally. And that's the next level, is mental or intellectual stimulation, where you look at each other and you treat each other as equals intellectually. Like, you don't think that she's dumber than you, or she doesn't think you're dumber than her.
What do they call it? They call it sociopology or something.
I don't know, but what you mean, the when you, being attracted to? Yeah. No, that's a whole sapiosexual.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know that that's true for me, because I can be very superficial. Mm. I mean, I've dated girls just because they gave a back tickle really well.
Yeah.
For way too long. 3 months longer than I should have. It's like, that back tickle's good, man. Because, you know, here's a business idea, and someone laughed at me when I suggested this on the show the other day. But how about a place that's not dodgy, it's not a massage parlor, but you have a tickle place where you can go. Dude, I know lots of people. I know it sounds freaky, but I know lots of people who pay money for that. Just get a nice back tickle. It's the best thing in the world.
So you've never been...
And then spiritual is the top one.
So you've never been with a guy, never been attracted to one?
No, that's not my thing, dude.
Yeah.
I would admit it if I was, and frankly, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. I'm very pro the whole LGBT community. Mm. They must do their thing. I have some tremendous friends, but the attraction's either there or it isn't.
Yeah. Have you ever dated a black woman?
No.
You haven't?
No.
You gotta
missing
get one.
Out, man. You're missing out.
I have tried. I was battered badly. And I'm not going to tell you who it was either.
Has anyone ever broken your heart, bro? Because you got like your heart.
Look, I've broken up. There was a girl I dated in like 2007-08.
Yeah.
Who I remember driving home after she broke up with me, and I cried like a little bitch.
Wow.
But that lasted a day. And yeah. And I'm not some hardcore guy. You know, there are lots of people who they go, oh, well, my heart's broken and I'll get over it because I'm a strong man. That wasn't what was going on in my head. It just, after a day, didn't bother me anymore.
Yeah.
And I as I said to you earlier, just maybe it's fortunate. Maybe it's a kind of mental problem, but my emotional needs very low. Usually, I'm okay if I'm on my own. That's why COVID was not difficult for me. I mean, if I wanted to see people, I did. I didn't care about the rules.
Soul's like that, eh?
Yeah. Oh, you like that?
Space, yeah.
Very, very much like that.
You know,
he hates even the show, having to come shoot.
So I mean, that's interesting because, you know, the natural human inclination is to belong. Right?
Yes.
So this is an interesting part of our evolutionary biology, is that if you didn't belong to the tribe, if you didn't make connections with the tribe, you were left behind and you would die, or they would kill you, or something horrible would happen to you. But because we live in an age now where you can be solitary, and you can not only survive, but you can thrive as a solitary person. And you know, the facts are on the ground that people are getting married later, if at all. A lot of people are deciding not to marry. 100%. A lot of people are deciding not to have children. And I'm not talking about class or race divisions. Across the board, the world, people are just getting into that state that our grandparents would have been at 16, 17. You know, we're doing it at 40, 50, and maybe not at all.
Yeah.
It's bad for the future of the human race. But I think it's a choice that everybody gets to make. I mean, my sister and her boyfriend have been together for 12 years. They're not married.
Yeah.
And they're as solid as can be, you know? If you don't feel social pressure, and I doubt very much that any of the three of us anyway, and probably many people who are listening to this and watching it now, I don't doubt that there are many of us who probably don't need the kind of companionship that our ancestors needed.
Yeah.
Because you're allowed these days to live pretty much as a solitary person and have a very successful, meaningful, powerful life. I think children are a blessing, and that's why I say I reserve the right to change my mind. But it's about who you have those children with too.
Very important.
You know, if you make a mistake, and I'm sure there are lots of people who would also understand that you've got that call from someone once where they're like,
"Hey,
I might be pregnant," and then you go cold. Like, I'm talking about it from the man's point of view, obviously. So I know that feeling.
Yeah.
And if you didn't plan it and it's not what you wanted with that person, don't do it. Because you're bringing a whole person into the world. It's the most irresponsible thing you can do.
Selfish, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For what?
Yeah.
A whole person. And now you got to be, and that person's not there just for a few years. They're there for the whole of their lives, whole of yours.
I remember, because obviously most black people, we grew up with the Christian background, right?
Sure, of course.
So I remember listening to you on the radio. First time ever, I heard someone say they don't believe in God. I was like, hey, what the fuck? Yeah, what is this guy saying? What do you mean? Which one is this one, Saul? And then as I grew older and started researching and finding more about religion, I'm like, oh, okay, actually, this guy was onto
something.
Out
of all the things you've asked me in this interview, this is the one that is the most difficult for me to answer.
Yeah.
Because I'm not proud of the way I used to talk about people who have faith. I was mean. I was one of those militant atheists who shout their opinions at you and think they've got a better argument than you and that they're going to change your mind by abusing you. I mean, not all the time, but there were parts of when I used to argue with someone, even friends of mine. I've lost friends over this.
For real? It's that deep?
Yeah. There was a friend whose wedding I went to, and I remember another mate of mine and I were sitting at dinner with him and his wife after they'd been married, and we were talking, and I said something like, oh my God, it was hot today. And she was one of these very religious people. And she just, the oh my God part upset her so much that she got up from the table and she was crying. I mean, look, she might have been a bit weird, but the fact is we never saw him or her again after that. And I don't like that. I don't think it's my place to hurt other people. You know, my grandfather before he died, and out of all four of my grandparents, he was the only one who lived into my 20s. And I remember about a month or two before he died, he said to me, I was talking to him about all kinds of things. You know, old people teach you stuff. I don't think he meant it to be a lesson because he didn't know he was going to die a month later. But I remember him saying to me, just be kind to people. And I thought, sure, you know, that's a thing I haven't done. It's all about me. It's like what I believe, what I think. I'm telling people what to do. That's a horrible way to live your life. And if I could go back and unsay some of those unkind things that I said, especially when it comes to religion, I would. Because frankly, it doesn't matter who's right. Who cares who wins the argument at the end of the day? An argument's fun, don't get me wrong. But the moment you hurt people in an argument, you take apart their belief in what the real things in the world are and what matters. That's just cruel. You don't have to be cruel to people.
I've got God on the line. Do you want to apologize for you?
I had God on the line once on the radio show. I interviewed God a couple of times. That also got me into trouble. All right, are we done?
Yeah. We're almost done. We're going to play a quick game quickly. It's called One Must Go.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you two radio DJs, and you must tell me which one must go.
But I probably won't even know who these people
are.
No,
you know them. All right, go. Are you ready? Let's go. Mark Gilman, Roger Good. One must go.
Oh, Gilman must go. He was never nice to me.
Gilman.
Yeah, I never had a relationship with him.
Yeah. Okay. Why is that?
Well, I took over his show and he was crap at it.
End of story.
I think they were, when I came in out of the blue, because I'd come from 702, they were all a bit threatened by me. So
yeah. Unathi Anele. One must go.
I love Unathi way more than Anele. I don't have a problem with Anele, but Unathi stays.
Not on because of radio, just
no,
because of who she is.
Personal relationship.
Relationship. Okay, cool. Fat Joe, DJ Fresh, one must go.
Yeah.
You know, Fresh and I are much closer than Joe and I.
Closer? Who are you closer with?
You mean, radio. Are you talking radio talent?
Yeah, radio talent.
Sure. No, I mean, I have to side with Fresh. You know, we tied Joe up and took over his TV show once.
Is it?
Yeah. Fresh and I tied him up, put masking tape over his mouth, and we took over his show.
Yeah.
On TV, live TV. There's nothing he could do.
So Fresh? Fresh over Joe?
Yeah.
Yes. Fat Joe?
Listen, I love Joe. Supremely talented guy, but Fresh has walked a long path with me, and I think he's so resilient. Even with all he's been through now, he'll come back.
What did you think about the whole allegations?
Horrible, dude. Horrible. Yeah. I mean, it's just a horrible thing to happen to anyone.
Yeah.
And who knows?
But didn't you have sexual misconduct allegations as well?
No. In the wake of all of this, some anonymous person on Twitter put out a tweet about how when she was 15, I had offered her a drink at a club, and then her account disappeared a day later. So I don't buy this. I mean, whatever. People are going to say things on Twitter. It doesn't make it true. That's why I also feel like we need to figure out in this world what is right and what is gossip. And the two should not be mixed. There are too many people who've had terrible things for real happen to them who are not being taken seriously, and other people who are not having real things happen to them that are trying to be taken seriously.
Is that, would you say that's why a lot of people think you're racist? Because of...
Listen, a lot of people think all kinds of things, especially the ones who haven't met me.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you've heard stuff. I've been called everything under the sun, so yeah. I'm frankly kind of impervious to it now. I don't really care, but it is a horrible thing to be called.
How do you feel? Because obviously we had our scandal beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks we're homophobes now, which is far from the truth.
Sure.
How does that make you feel? Because, like, if you know you're not a racist, but half of the population think you're racist.
Know, privately, it hurts you.
Mm.
But when I look at social media, I can't honestly say I care about that, because these are not people who are really interested in whether or not. If they wanted to make you a, if they thought you were a racist and they wanted to not make you a racist, they wouldn't respond with hatred and ugliness. They'd respond with love. If someone wants to change you, if they think you're not a great person, you're a racist, sexist, homophobe, Islamophobe, whatever, they change you with love. You persuade people by treating them with respect. You don't persuade people or change their minds with hatred and invective. And I'm afraid that's why people never change their minds on social media. So it would hurt me when, if I'd met someone and they thought I was a racist up front, because that's, I know that's not me. But there's so many people in this country who go through that. I think a lot of people assume that about other people. It's part of the reason we need to heal. But on social media, I'd say what you want.
My thing is, there's no path to redemption. So let's say I am a racist.
That's exactly right.
You know, let's say I am a racist soul, and then I'm like, all right, cool. You know, I didn't know I was a racist. Gareth,
how do you rehabilitate? You throw that whole person away?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, if we believe in prison reform, and if we believe, like Golden Miles Budu, who in this country has been campaigning for this for years, if you believe that you can take someone who's put in prison for dealing weed and you can bring them back into society, which I think we all believe is possible, right? Then surely someone who said something is equally rehabilitatable. And I think that there's no forgiveness in this culture at the moment. Mm. It's all about force, opinion, ugliness, cancellation. There's no one who wants to fix anything.
Yeah.
So how do we take them seriously?
Yeah, exactly. I know you're a big fan of Prince Philip. You used to send him a message every year. So how did you feel about when he passed away?
Shame. He was the last of a breed that's just gone out of this world. But they're almost like lizard people. Those old aristocrats of ancient Europe. I mean, those people, they were a force to be reckoned with once. They also started some incredibly destructive wars. They were representatives of colonization and all kinds of things. But I just loved the fact that Philip didn't care.
Yeah.
He didn't care. And that's something we can all learn from.
Lastly, a lot of people want to find out from you, what did you think about WHP's passing?
I was very upset by that.
Yeah, because you interviewed him.
I did. I interviewed him just a few weeks before. I think it was the last interview he did before he committed suicide. And I was very, very sad to hear the news. It affected me because I felt a real connection with him. You know, he did a bunch of jingles for us. He did some rap for us when we started Cliff Central. And he was a friend and a fan of what we were doing. And I was a fan of what he did.
Hmm.
And he was a tremendously talented musician. And a good person. He was a good guy, you know. I think he meant well. And this is why mental health issues and depression and suicide are something that we take very seriously on my shows. You never know, hey? Look at Robin Williams, this comedian everybody thought was so funny and so great.
And Avicii.
Look at these people. These are people we all look up to. And we don't know what darkness is going on in their lives.
Yeah. And you didn't pick anything up from WHP.
No, I mean, I asked him. I said to him straight up, how did you do it? Because he said he tried it before.
Three times. Yes.
And he told me what he'd done, and he'd gone to the car, and he, you know, it was a horrible thing to hear, but he was very matter of fact about it. And I'm not a psychologist, but maybe if you re-listen to that, you could pick up some things.
Yeah.
But of course, there's nothing you can do.
In your very illustrious career, what's your greatest achievement so far?
My interview with Mac and Soul.
My nigga.
Salmon Mo.
And Salmon Mo, who left the studio just now.
Gareth, in closing, man, what do you want to be remembered as,
Oh, you know what? I used to think that it was okay just to have made people laugh in traffic. I still think that's okay. I mean, maybe that's good enough. You know, if they put on my tombstone, Gareth Cliff made people laugh in traffic. I'm happy
you
with
done.
That.
Yeah. Gareth, thank you, so much, man. Like you, you know, in the podcasting space, you crawled so we could walk. We're not running yet.
I'm still crawling. I'm still crawling. Trust me. We've all got to figure out a lot more before we can call this game one.
Yeah.
But thank you, guys. And thank you. Done for everything you're doing because thank you're pushing those boundaries. And you're winning audiences, and I know that it's not easy.
Yeah,
I'm in the same position you're in a lot of the time, and you got to keep fighting, man.
Yeah, I think you're the first white guy we've interviewed, because Jay something doesn't count. He's black.
He's very black. Yeah, he's blacker than me. He's blacker than Mariah Carey. And Meghan Markle. Yeah. Jesus, everyone's blacker than Meghan Markle. All right, thank you, guys.
Podcast and chill, boom.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to Podcast and Chill. Magic.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.